Welcome to a data center focused episode of Software Gone Wild. As you know, this podcast is discussing everything software defined, including the topic that we'll talk about today, which is software defined data center, or as my friend Joe Onisik would say, stupid. It's a private cloud. Why do you call it software defined data center? Anyway, now that I mentioned software defined data center, you probably know which product we'll talk about. It's NSX from VMware, and they released a new version a few months ago. And instead of reading the release notes, I did something way smarter. I asked my good friend Anthony Burke whether he would come on the podcast and speak about the new features. It took us a while to get it all set up, but finally, the stars aligned, and here's Anthony. How are you doing?
Good, thank you, Ivan. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you.
That's good.
Slowly wrapping up for the year, so life is good. And you?
Yes, very much the same. It's a mad rush before Christmas, but calm before the storm.
Yeah, I know how that feels, luckily. I managed to wrap it all up, a few weeks ago, so now I'm just tying up the loose ends and sending out emails and things like that, but not bad. So what are you doing these days?
I am currently keeping myself busy as a senior systems engineer for VMware's network security business unit. So that keeps me out of trouble most days, talking to customers and designing for customers solutions around using the product NSX. So I get to be a bit of a vendor shill, but I cut out the crap and tell it how it is.
Totally appreciate that. We have too many vendor shills that have no idea what they're talking about.
That's one thing I don't want to be is one person that doesn't know what I'm talking about.
No, you would never go down that path. I know you. So, tell me, what's new in NSX? What do you want to talk about today?
It's pretty exciting, actually. It sort of slipped out under the radar in just before VMworld. I think it was 3 or 4 days before VMworld in August that NSX 6.2 slipped out onto the web as a pre-VMworld session that sort of, or release that was set up for all the sessions at VMworld. So 6.2 was a minor dot release that became quite a large release in terms of there was lots of new functions, lots of new features that, depending on who you are and what your use case was either a massive release for you or just a maturity release. There's a couple of things I'd like to talk about today. Across vCenter NSX, some of the maturity around operations and some of the different things we're doing to help make the product more polished. Because we've come a long way in 2 years.
Okay, so where do you want to start?
Oh, let's start with operation.
Okay.
It's something I believe is more important than new features. New shinies is good, but new shinies are what the sales guys sell, and new shinies aren't always what you want to be concerned yourself with. So for me, operation improvements, something along the lines of there's a few things that were sort of large in this release. I'll start with one of them in particular, the communication health channel. So we have a distributed system. It's essentially managed via the controllers and NSX manager. And we distribute our state information for if it's switching, routing, or firewall function to the hosts. And initially, we had some instability. And yes, I can admit to this on the record that not everything's perfect. But we had some instability in some of the way the functions worked. Some of the services would go up and down or flap. And we had no way of identifying if certain processes were coming up and down. And so one of the features in 6.2 was the ability to monitor what we call the communication health channel. So the communication health channel allows us to identify essentially, there's two main processes, which is the vShield firewall daemon, which is the firewall agent, and what we call NetCPA, which is the control plane agent. And these are responsible for the core functions of our distributed feature set. These, if these were broken, you would have to log on to the individual host, do a get against the status and to confirm it was up or down. Now we have the ability to essentially have an API poll that, and they give you a green, amber, or red status, which was nice to know. And then if there was a particular function that was broken, we could actually go through some sort of resiliency checks to ensure it could come back up automatically.
Okay, so if the control plane agent on an ESX host crashes, previously you would just go like, can't reach it, too bad, let's pretend it's okay.
That's one way of saying it, yes. You would have to log on, identify the box that a particular function was down on, and manually restart it potentially, or go through the whole process of troubleshooting logs and finding out what was going on.
And now you would get an alert saying, hey, something's broken. And in the background, the NSX controller would try to restart a few things if it could.
Yeah, so under for us, if you're a UI user of NSX, you can actually identify, okay, this cluster or this host in a cluster has its control plane agent down. And what can I do to reset that? Or is there a possibility to reset that? I can identify such things. So, for example, I might have the firewall agent up, but the control plane agent's down. And what steps do I need to take to restore that? And so I can actually begin the function to restart that by selecting on the cluster, essentially check the health. And if I need to restart the service, I can do so.
But can you also evacuate VMs from the host? Let's say a host in the cluster has problems and you can't get it up and running again. So yeah, you report an alert, but the VMs are still there and they feel lonely and isolated.
So that's a good statement. And I know that if we have issues with the control plane and we're propagating the MAC address and IP address of location of a virtual machine, if it was on a logical switch, for example, we essentially will know where it is if that VM moved to another host. Because the other hosts actually are active, they will notice that the VM has moved and update the control plane accordingly. If there was numerous hosts that were having issues, we would move them to a host that was active accordingly. Now, we remember the last position of a virtual machine at any given time. So, for example, when we have failure scenarios and the control plane goes down, we sort of lock the control path to know the exact last configuration of the environment so the data path can continue forwarding. So in terms of needing to move it, we wouldn't have to move it, but if you were to perform vMotion on a workload and move it to an active host that was had a green health check, you would be able to have continued connectivity.
Yeah, I was more looking at the opposite scenario. I understand that the data plane continues to work even if you have a control plane issue. But if you do have control plane issue and it is running on top of an HA cluster, it would be nice to just move the VMs of the affected host automatically.
And on the record, I'm actually going to say I do not know. And I will go find that out.
And we'll put that in the show notes.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
So, I love what you told me already, but you probably did more than just the health check on the operational improvements, right?
Absolutely.
So, what's next?
So, Central CLI, yes, we harken back to the command line interface, allowed us to execute read-only commands for a troubleshooting of NSX in a central way. So, beforehand, you had to jump to identify, let's say you had a layer 3 forwarding issue. You didn't know if the routes are loaded into the host, given that we have a distributed router and the fact that we can load the hosts into the host routing table for the VMs. You would have to identify the host the VM was on, SSH as a root admin to the VM server, which already the security guys are having palpitations.
Yes.
Jump into the host and execute commands to show logical switch or show the logical router, show the route, and so on and so forth. Central CLI allows us to access NSX Manager via SSH or console or an API, and execute data from our communication channel. So previously we discussed that we had a health check against the communication channel, being VShield, Firewall Daemon, and NetCPA, so firewall and routing. And what we can do is look up logical switch information, logical routing information, distributed firewall or edge information from a central spot. So that allows us to start executing against the distributed function, so not worrying where a virtual machine is, to find out if something's up, if the routes have been propagated and installed into the routing table, if the firewall rule set has been pushed down, identifying if the firewall rules are applying to the relevant VM. It can be done from a central spot. We can control who's accessing the environment. A bit nicer than passing out root access to your vSphere host.
Okay, but this sounds nice. So you actually started treating the whole NSX cluster like line cards in a high-end router, for example, right?
Absolutely. So our good friend Dmitry Kalintsev treats the distributed logical router very much like line cards, yes.
I know that there are certain line cards in some old boxes I worked with where you could actually connect the console to the line card and execute line card commands. So it looks like the same thing here.
Absolutely. Yes, and given that, I'll admit, it's well before my time for some of those boxes. It's the same. We proxy essentially an API call from NSX Manager to the actual hosts. So, yeah, the central CLI internal REST API and certain scripts will either do a REST call to the controller cluster or leverage the RabbitMQ's message bus to the VShield Firewall Daemon or NetCPA and poll the distributed logical router's control VM.
And now you just answered my next question. How did you know what the next question would be?
Aussies are psychic. Oh, we're in the future, right? We're in the future.
Okay, so you're using Tachyons, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask you whether this is just a wrapper around an API.
So Yes and no. It is in wraparound an API and making it nice. And it's also some scripts, but yeah, it is. And it's made it easier. So if you aren't API savvy, which a lot of us aren't yet in this day and age, whilst many of us are becoming API savvy, it gives you a Cisco-esque familiar command line to troubleshoot NSX, which gives the warm and fuzzies to certain people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, just to clarify, is that API accessible to regular humans, or are you using an internal API to get all the data to the CLI?
So my understanding, and from how I've used it, this is an API that polls NSX Manager the same way as you would. There are certain functions that are pulling, that are scripts, that are pulling information, you know, a set of multiple APIs that will parse the information back in a certain way. So I will state that there are APIs that are exposed. There's no secret source that I'm believing from what I've executed. But in the infinite wisdom of product management, there may be one or two that might not be public, but as far as I've seen, it looks to be pretty human accessible.
Nice. Then you mentioned Traceflow in the show notes. So what's that?
So Traceflow is something pretty cool. So it allows us to start injecting packets into the network from part in the virtual environment to another part and follow what objects it passes through. So from VM1 to VM2, they might be separated by, for example, a distributed logical router. So segment A and segment B. I can inject a packet from a VM, identify it hits a distributed firewall, what rule it passes through, what logical switch it passes through, which gateway on which host passes through a bit of the physical network. We can't see everything, but we can see some things and identify essentially all the logical objects between point A and point B and visualize that. And so, for example, if I've got a rule blocking certain type of traffic, if I've injected a certain flow, let's say it's SSH and I've got SSH blocked at the destination, I can see that that particular flow was blocked at the destination on the ingress of that distributed firewall. And I can actually go troubleshoot that further. So it allows you to quickly identify, essentially, have I blocked something or have I been silly as an administrator?
Ah, so you are inserting a bogus packet at the VM NIC level.
Yes.
Then the packet takes the regular data plane path through all the routing, switching, tunnel encapsulation, firewalling, yada, yada, yada features. And if a feature does something weird to the packet, that feature would report that, yeah, I did this to this packet.
Absolutely. So I'm looking at my example in front of me in my lab, and I can see I've injected a particular flow. Let's say it's a source of, it might be a ICMP packet, or it could be a particular crafted application packet like with certain headers. And I can set the source IP address, the source MAC address, or particularly even a source NIC from a VM and the destination, and I can see injected at VNIC of web VM1, passes through the firewall, was received by the firewall, forwarded by the firewall, passed onto the logical switch, passed via distributed router, destination logical switch, so on and so forth. And if I click on those links of the firewall, it actually shows me the rule ID that has permitted that flow.
Hmm, really nice.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, like, you don't go, wow, I'm going to buy this because of this alone. But it's one that it sort of rounds off the toolkit when you're troubleshooting.
Oh, yeah, it definitely helps when you're scratching your head and you don't have a clue where to start.
If you also, like, for me, we log everything, right, as every firewall vendor does. But you don't necessarily have the right tool set or time to go through and look at historical logs or when did this occur. Whereas if an app guy comes screaming to you, the network's the fault, network's at fault. Well, you can inject a packet exactly how the application would send it onto the wire and instantly know if you are at fault. But if it makes the other end, you're absolved. So, you know, was it mean time to blame gets reduced?
Well, it's actually mean time to innocence, but yeah.
Yes, yeah, sorry, mean time to innocence, mean time to blame. Yes, depends which way you're pointing the finger, right?
Yep. This is great for troubleshooting the overlay part of the solution. But what if the packet actually gets dropped in the physical network? How would that show in the Traceflow tool?
It's a very good question. I know, let's say there's like a diplomatic way here. We know that this is an issue. We can identify elements of the network, and that's all we can talk about.
Okay.
So whether we know that we need to see elements of the physical network itself, and we at this stage cannot see physical elements of the network. For example, I cannot see my spine switch, my leaf switch, and elements such as that.
Obviously. I mean, I didn't even expect that.
No. So we're aware from a VDS point of view where the top of rack switch is and what it is and what it's connected to. We can participate in LLDP or CDP, but we don't report that as part of traceflow.
Okay. But can I at least see that the packet vanished in the transport network?
So you would see it in the terms of the receipt. Let's say you got two virtual machines on a logical switch, and one's on a hypervisor A and another's on a hypervisor B. The packet would never reach hypervisor B on the ingress of that the VNIC into, or the physical NIC into the switch, which we would never identify it as arriving. Therefore, it would mark it as dropped in the physical network.
And would I see the outgoing port on the source hypervisor?
Yes. So when you look at a traceflow flow, it'll go through when you leave the logical switch, or you'll see it leave a host, being the host it's on, and it will just never get to the destination hypervisor.
Okay, so I know the outgoing interface on the source hypervisor, and I know it never arrived to the destination hypervisor, so I know it's the physical network problem. I can start troubleshooting the physical network.
Yeah, essentially, yes. You would know that it would have left. And given that you have bound your VTEP, a virtual VXLAN tunnel endpoint, to a VDS uplink or a pair of uplinks, you know it would have gone out, and that's it. So you know that it might be NIC 1 and 2, it might be NIC 3 and 4, but yes.
Oh, yeah. If you have a port channel, then obviously you can't know which NIC it was, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, just to make sure, it goes out the NICs and then it just doesn't arrive.
Mm-hmm.
If, and this is just a sort of not plugging in the product, but there is a tech preview of us physically mapping the underlay network with VROps, one of our other products, which it's not my product, so I don't pay too much attention to it. But VROps can has a tech preview of mapping objects in the physical network outside of VMware's domain and correlating that event.
Oh, so they would look at things like forwarding tables and try to figure out how the packet would flow.
Yeah, so some of the visualization that VROps pulls out is, okay, a logical switch is relevant to these hypervisors. The virtual machines attached to it are these virtual machines, and the physical network below it, and identify if there's any packet drops, if there's any utilization issues on the physical network. And if at the same time you're having packet drops in the logical switch, you could trap an alarm accordingly.
Ah, okay.
So it does require being the Borg cube of your network.
Of course.
And there's a monitoring platform or operation platform, not a real-time incident platform. So there is, you know, pros and cons to that, but that's the premise of the platform.
Yeah, of course. Perfect. So it looks like troubleshooting actually got way easier than it was before.
Absolutely. And it's something that I'm of the belief that before you add new shinies, make the old stuff better.
And now let's move to the new shinies, where you really need the old stuff to make it work, which is Cross vCenter NSX.
Cross vCenter NSX was something that's come out to address a shortcoming of the product, where we used to have one vCenter to one NSX mapping. Your logical network domain was bound to a vCenter.
Okay.
Now, in Australia, that's okay, because a lot of customers only had one vCenter. We're a bit smaller down under. We do some cool stuff, but we're a bit smaller. In EMEA and in the US, lots of customers had lots of vCenters. If it's multi-site environments, if it was using site recovery, if it was using DR, cross vCenter NSX or multi vCenter NSX, depending if you are pre or post productization, solves that problem of we can start looking at building network topologies that are visible to both vCenters. So data center A and data center B, or site A, site B.
I knew there was stretched VLAN in the picture.
No, not necessarily stretched VLAN, but no. So yeah, this is where I like. We can wrap VXLAN.
Yeah.
So we can route VXLAN across a data center interconnect and not have to stretch a layer 2 and not have to sphincter twitch about the whole DCI. We can have a routed link for this.
Yeah, I know, because it's running over VXLAn. Yeah.
Yes. Just don't try and fragment our VXLAN. That's not going to result nicely. But yes, it allows us to essentially build out what we call universal objects. Now, this is something I would like to clarify, and those who listen hopefully have used NSX. When you build out a single vCenter solution, you have objects or what is easily broad brushed as context. We can build security rules based on local objects relevant to the vCenter. We can build out security policies relevant to the vCenter, so source and destination, data store, cluster, things like that. When you build cross vCenter NSX, you need to use a new object construct called universal objects. So it's a universal logical switch, universal logical router, universal security groups and universal firewall rules. There is a drawback, or at least a catch to this. You can't use all that rich context between two vCenters at this stage, or up to 8 vCenters. These new elements are what's replicated through the universal synchronization service. And if you choose to have an active application where you leverage, you know, like in vMotion, thanks to vSphere 6, cross vCenter vMotion, you need to use these universal objects.
Okay, let's start with the simplest possible example.
Sure.
We have a VXLAN-based port group, or how do you call that in NSX, to be precise?
Yeah, that's fine. So essentially, all VXLANs are port groups until they leave the host, and then they're impressed with an encapsulation header. It really is a port group. You look on your DVS or BDS, and you'll see there's a port group matching the VXLAN.
So you would create this segment through the NSX manager or API or what have you, and then the same port group would automatically appear in multiple vCenters, right?
Yeah, so the first step would be I have 2 vCenters or 3 vCenters and 3 NSX managers. We point the other NSX managers to a primary one, or there's an election process where one NSX manager becomes the master and up to 7 others become secondary. When you create these new universal objects, that's what's replicated. So in the case of a logical switch, that port group, its most raw essence, is passed to the other vCenters with a unique object ID, or MoRef in our world, for each of those vCenters, so ensuring we aren't overlapping.
Okay, so it's not one NSX manager managing multiple vCenter environments, it's actually multiple independent NSX managers syncing certain parts of their data structures.
Absolutely, yes. That's the best way to put it. So there is if you look at a site local, there's a vCenter and an NSX manager, and then another site or another cluster, there is another NSX there, another vCenter.
And the NSX managers would then among themselves elect a master, and that master would be responsible for pushing out the changes to other NSX managers.
Yeah, so it synchronizes new universal objects to the children. Yeah, absolutely.
So this means that I could have certain port groups which are specific to one vCenter, so they are local, and I could have certain other port groups which would be universal and replicated to all the other members of this NSX cluster.
Absolutely. So you could have topologies that are site-local, and I use the term site-local. It's not VMware's one. But site local, which would be a local logical switch or a local port group, or you could build a universal logical switch, which is then promulgated to all of the sites. So essentially, you build out, firstly, a universal transport zone. And a transport zone is the width of my logical network can go. So you essentially include all the universal sites, so site 1, site 2, site 3, and then I can build universal objects. If I build a site local logical switch, it does not get seen or addressed by any other vCenter. So that's the key thing to remember. So if you start using universal objects, that's what gets promulgated across. Hence, they have their own segment ID pool, so VXLAN numerical identifier pool, and that's shared across all those hosts.
And the universal objects would be the port groups, the distributed routers, and distributed firewalls, right?
Yeah, and then there's a universal security group too, which is a grouping mechanism for firewalls.
Yeah, but that's just syntactic sugar, right?
Yeah, it makes it easy for human eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
What about the edge routers?
So the edge routers stay as edge routers. There's nothing exciting there. So an edge router is managed by a local NSX deployment and would become the gateway or egress for that segment. And there's a few architectures, obviously, here where you start thinking as a network guy, what becomes my gateway?
Exactly.
So there's two things here. How do I route out and how do I stop tromboning?
Exactly. I'm guessing. How did you guess?
I suppose there's two worlds here. And this is a bit of musingment of the network security team, is that the network security team, a majority, and if you look at LinkedIn, a lot of us are ex-Cisco or network background. And then we have our VMware team who are VMware guys. And so there's this cross-pollination of these VMware guys know heaps about the hypervisor and compute virtualization and have not done much networking. And commercial network guys know about the problems of ingress and egress optimization, yet never really touched storage or data stores, right? And so it's when we have these group love-ins inside of the company, we have this moment, well, what about egress optimization or ingress? And they go, what? What do you mean? And yeah, definitely amusing. And the network guys get there much quicker, but we all get there in the end, and it's very amusing to see the smirks on our faces. But yes, that's something that's addressed by us. There's one official update of part of NSX 6.2 to help address egress optimization. So egress optimization, or it's a multi-site enhancement, is where we can actually say, okay, I want to apply what we call a concept of a locale ID. So as an Aussie, I say local ID, but a locale ID, which allows us to stamp routes with the UUID of the site's NSX manager upon the route. So what that allows us to do is the NSX controller will only send routes to the ESXi hosts with the matching locale ID. That means we can forward out the site's local instance. If I look to, I have a logical switch across both sites, I have a universal logical router across both sites, but I have an NSX edge in site A and an NSX edge in site B, I can ensure I send out my local gateway, as opposed to coming across the data center interconnect, then coming out. And I will put a picture in the show notes just so you can see what I'm talking to.
Yeah, so effectively you've replicated the scenario where I have two routers, one router on site A and one router on site B, and then I have OTV between the sites and I do FHRP localization on the OTV link, right?
Yes, very much so. Again, this is not requiring any special source other than NSX to do.
All right. So you would have to run a separate NSX Edge Services Router instance on each site.
Yeah, it all comes down to design requirements. Because you lose a lot of the function of the distributed firewall by using universal objects in a purely site-independent topology, you're deploying an NSX Edge or Edges anyway for this application topology. So you could about the requirements, but yes, you deploy an NSX, another NSX Edge. That's in its essence, yes.
And both NSX edges would then get the default route from the outside, and they would propagate the default route to the overlay part, where you would tag it with a site ID, sort of.
Yeah, so our locale ID is purely exclusive to the way for us. You know, we are the ones who see that. And so it's like it's anything that originates, if I need to go out to the physical infrastructure, I can go out my local edge. If that local edge is down, I can cross my device interconnect and come out my other side.
So there is the active standby portion of the whole thing. So it's like the local edge would advertise routes with lower cost.
Yeah, it's a VMware special source. Let's put it that way, yes. But we essentially can have up to 8 SOATs with a local egress. So essentially 8 locale IDs.
Internally, you are preferring the local routes over remote routes, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so it would be like admin distance, sort of.
Yeah, that is a really good way of putting it. Very simple way of putting it.
Okay, but
I'll ask the question to you. What about ingress?
No, I'm not there yet. So this only works if you have distributed logical router on the overlay side, right?
So we prefer for connectivity from a logical switch to peer to connect to a distributed logical router, and for that to peer to an edge gateway with a routing protocol. It gives us a bit more flexibility and control, and in the case of this routing architecture, we can impress the relevant route for the site egress and ingress. The DLR has a small overhead, so I find it the pain of not doing it far outweighs the ease of doing it. It's very easy to deploy.
Okay, because I really can't imagine how you would do this thing if you would only have two routers connected to a same VXLAN segment.
So there is that. You'd have to have different gateways, have both gateways in the VM, and that's dirty and yuck.
Exactly.
Universal Logical Router lets us essentially peer from the DLR's control VM to the edge gateway for the control plane, and then we inject into the data plane the route for DLR to the edge.
Yeah, you take over the default gateway so you can, after that, you can do your secret sauce.
Yeah, it's not so secret now with that many blogs and published articles on it, but yes, it used to be very secret.
Okay, so you solved the egress part. What about the ingress part?
So ingress is a can of worms, because I'm going to ask you a question. How would you solve ingress?
I wouldn't.
That's not what I expected. I thought you may have had a few ideas up your sleeve.
Yeah, well, the proper idea is you tell the application idiots to get lost, redesign their application so it uses load balancing and DNS properly, and then you don't have a problem anymore.
Perfect. That's good. So, and as an infrastructure company, we try and help absolve the sins of application designers.
Okay.
That's why HSRP's there. That's why vMotion's there, right? Hey, default tolerance. That's the networker's view on infrastructure. But so at the moment, there is egress optimization as part of NSX or vSphere. There is no native ingress optimization. So if you do can't control the routes outside, you will come in by one link and be passed across the data center interconnect. That's part of the out of the box. But if you were an attendee or a follower of VMworld or watched the Twitter feed, my awesome coworker Andrew Babakian in Sydney actually wrote a Python-based ingress optimization module. And this is where I give a plug to APIs, because you could treat him, sure, he's a VMware employee, but he just had an idea to the API. And so he built a solution that would watch for a vMotion event. So if you saw, for example, the picture we're both looking at, VM1 decided to vMotion to site B. Right?
Route health injection. Okay.
Oh, yeah. You know exactly where I'm going with this. What we're doing is essentially watching a host route injection /32 and inject into BGP, which would advertise that across your WAN. Now, emphasis on WAN here. The reason is we all know our providers don't accept anything smaller than a /28. I know in Australia, Telstra does not accept anything smaller than a /28.
It's usually /24, but yeah.
Yeah, so I know it depends if you're in a private or if it's public, but yeah. So the notion is we're not going to accept anything tiny, but in a WAN optimization point of view, look, that means I can actually see the route come out. I can control it if I'm having sites inside a metro cluster or if I'm in a smaller WAN or private MPLS cloud, or if I'm at least I can start controlling my ingress. Now, look, there's many ways to skin a cat, right? The application, yes, should be designed first, the infrastructure second, the network controlling it third. So this is one way, and this speaks to, I suppose, the power of APIs. This module watches the vMotion event, watches it go across, injects the relevant edge with the /32. So that VM moved, VM1, a crossover, the /32 is advertised out at site B, but the /24 is coming out of both sites still. So it gives you essentially control over that application stack.
Okay, so what the Python script is doing, it's listening to the vMotion events, and when you figure out that a VM has moved to the other site, it reconfigures the Edge Services router on that site to advertise a /32.
Exactly. So you've got BGP redistributing connected, so static routes into its routing table, and it, via the API, it injects that host route VM. Because VM Tools is aware of the VM's IP address, we can confidently tell it what it is, inject that into the routing table. Now, it's not as a networker, /32 is in the routing table. Yeah, okay, not ideal. But it's one example of using APIs and events to control your infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
It's not a product of VMware. It's a third-party tool made by an employee, but it gives you an idea of what you can do at scale. And I believe a few of our customers, I believe you got a standing ovation for doing a live demo at VMworld, young Andrew. You know what? Give him a round of applause. I've definitely bought him a few beers for that because it's pretty impressive.
It is, definitely. And now Cisco should come along saying, well, you can't really transport those /32s into the internet, but were you to use Lisp?
You're devil's advocate.
No, I just hate all these convoluted clutches. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, and look, it solves a problem. If you have that problem, great. If you don't, you look at it and go, cool, next.
Well, it works around the problem. It doesn't solve the problem.
Oh, if we build our apps right from the start.
Exactly. The problem is that the app architecture is broken. You can't solve that by implementing route health injection.
And I think I'll refer to my previous comment. If we built our apps right and didn't rely on network HSRP and VMware, vMotion, and fault tolerance, we'd be in a different world, right?
Yes. Much better world, if you ask me. But there wouldn't be so many consultants.
I'm glad we're on the same page about that.
Which would make it a better world, but let's move on. This thing only works if you know the IP address of the VM. And you mentioned VMware Tools. So does that mean that I have to run VMware Tools on the VM to know the IP address of the VM?
Previously, before NSX 6.2, I would have skulkingly said yes. As of 6.2, we've added additional methods or what we're calling IP discovery. So
okay.
VM Tools is an agent that runs on Linux or Windows, and allows the VM to perform better. You can control it through some webhook or some API hooks to shut down neatly. You can actually see what IP address it has. Things like learn what operating system type it is, if it's Windows or what version of Linux. Amongst, I'm probably down talking what VM tools can really do, but as for me, VM tools allows us to get a bit more information. It was our only way of identifying the IP address from the workload before 6.2. After 6.2, these IP enhancements moved from VM tools to then starting to use DHCP and ARP as methods of learning. So I'll just explain beforehand how it worked. Beforehand, before 6.2, VM tools would update vCenter from the guest virtual machine, the IP address of the VM. vCenter would pass to NSX Manager the reported IP address, and then NSX Manager would pass back down to the same host the IP address and the relevant rules to vShield Firewall Daemon, and then put that into the firewall module because we resolve all our IPs back. And this is for any learning of IP function. So if it's vMotion, if it's distributed firewall, that's how we learned it. Because at the end of the day, if you take away all of our context, we're just doing really smart IP address learning. All right, and that's no secret to anyone.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to know more about that, I did a whole podcast with Brett Headland on how a distributed firewall works. And we spent quite some time on this exact mechanism.
Yeah, which at the time, great. Now we have a better ways in the kernel space, essentially on the distributed firewall's DV filter. There's many slots. We can actually set it to learn an IP address from a DHCP request or bonding or ARP snooping. Pass that backwards via the vSIP module or the message bus back out to NSX Manager. So not relying on VMware tools. So we give you three methods now, and you can enable them all if you want to, or pick the right one for the right workload, because every virtualized workload has VM tools. So you can pick DHCP or ARP or VM tools as a method of learning these IP address, which gives you that control, and you can guarantee that the IP is what it is, which is nice.
Okay, so let me recap, and I apologize for the sarcasm. After 15 years, VMware implemented ARP and DHCP snooping. Hooray!
Yes, so DHCP snooping, ARP snooping, done.
Finally. Yes.
If you're a network guy, and this is me being a network guy, not a VMware employee, the DVS isn't a real switch. It's a learning mechanism, does its own thing, and it just forwards, right? We add the smarts to it now with other solutions, with NSX and things like that. So, yes, that's a very broad brush, but that's how I see it.
So, finally, you started making DVS into a learning switch.
Yeah, it's like a learning computer. It's going to become Skynet one day.
No, but this is really cool, finally.
So it is, because essentially SpoofGuard is where, so if you've deployed SpoofGuard on any vendor's equipment, you learn their MAC address, the IP address binding, and you lock that down, right? Mm-hmm. That's your learned set. You know, it's for a physical device, if it's access points or whatever it needs to be. This allows us to actually learn multiple addresses and multiple MACs on the same host, or for example, if you have a loopback, you want to learn from a VM, and we can bind that. So you can learn an IPv4 address, an IPv6 address, a loopback that is pinned to the same MAC address, and use it as part of SpoofGuard. These mechanisms allow us to control this, which is pretty cool.
So it also works for IPv6.
Yes.
Awesome. Bonus points.
Yes. So we can say we can do SpoofGuard and learning for v4 and v6 at the same time.
Awesome. You get bonus points for this.
Oh, don't ask me too much about v6, but yeah, this is one thing I can confidently say and very proud of. Absolutely.
Now, mentioning v6, does it work with distributed logic router now?
No.
Ah.
So you will build a logical switch with v6 addresses on it, mm-hmm. NSX Edge logical by IPv6 connectivity on the interface, and we static route that out. All I can say is watch this space.
Yeah, of course. I know it.
You know, we know as a company, it's a shortcoming. And Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah, I know eventually you'll get there.
Sorry, Ed Hawley. Shout out to him. He gave me kudos for discussing this previously. And then I've let him down when it comes to routing.
Finally, there's this thing in the show notes about layer 2 bridging into distributed logical router.
Yeah.
What's that?
So previously, we've been able to do layer 2 bridging into the edge. So for off the NSX edge, I had a logical switch. And I would connect my workload to logical switch. I could then add a bridging instance and extend that logical switch to a VLAN. So if I had a physical server, I could have a virtual database server on the VXLAN segment and a physical database server on the VLAN itself and bridge those two together. So for example, VXLAN 5001 and VLAN 2000 connected together, and that would connect into the NSX Edge. The catch would be attached to the NSX Edge, which is not ideal. You don't get the benefit of what distributed router gives. In NSX 6.2, I can attach a logical switch to a distributed router, which has a gateway in every host, and apply a bridging instance to a logical switch and pass out the VLAN. So instead of plumbing into the edge, I now plumb into the distributed router, which allows me to sort of streamline my application topology and deployment. So we can coexist distributed logical routing and bridging.
But that would require the same VLAN to be present in all ESX hosts, right?
That's the catch. So if you're exactly right. And this is the one. So when you look at our, and this is why we talk about our edge and management clusters when we speak about our design, when you look to, you know, drink the VMware Kool-Aid and everything's virtualized, you don't need to plumb the data VLANs or other VLANs to all the hosts. You plumb them to the edge cluster because the NSX Edge Gateway will broker logical overlay connectivity into VLAN connectivity for you, right? Where if you do use these sort of things where you bridge in a particular physical service VLAN, if you do that way, you have to plumb the VLAN to every host. That's a given. If you're already doing that, if you're, let's say you're using a Cisco 7K, 5K, 2K, and you're using an older architecture, and you are plumbing VLANs down to all the hosts, that's fine. You're already doing it. So, hey, one VLAN for that particular database isn't too much of a hassle. If you're using a routed spine leaf architecture, you might be using Nexus 9Ks or Junipers, Brocades, whatever. You have a routing architecture, you might be using the spine leaf, and you actually are doing a full cross fabric in your data center. That's when you'll have to be mindful of where your VLANs are and where you place that physical server. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, all this sounds exciting. Where can I learn more about this?
That's a good question. So NSX and VMware in the infinite wisdom have actually hands-on labs you can use, and hands-on labs are the most underrated tool we have out there. We have an entire catalog of all VMware's products used in hands-on labs, so hol.vmware.com, and you can go there and pick on the two NSX labs, or there's numerous NSX labs, but there's an introduction to NSX, which introduces you to NSX 6.2, the features and functions in that, and it takes you through a step-by-step method of building out a topology and using all the cool features. There's an advanced lab too, which covers off ECMP and other advanced functions. The key thing of this is you can follow the rulebook or you can just do your own thing. So you get a real hands-on. You can break it. You can reset it. It's free, and you can do it as many times as you want. So you can learn hands-on stuff there. Secondly, there's heaps of blogs, and I would go into a shameless plug here. There's an upcoming VMware Press live lessons from myself, Ron Fuller, and Andreas Laquiant that's coming out in Q1 for NSX 6.2 called NSX for vSphere 6.2 Essentials. And then there's an upcoming book from us as well with VMware Press. So watch this space.
That's great. I can barely wait to see the book.
It's good. So yeah, there's lots to learn.
So where will you announce the book when it's published?
I will announce it on my blog at networkinferno.net, and I'm sure there'll be a few tweets around the place and blogs about it. So look to me on my website at networkinferno.net, or myself as at pandam_ on Twitter, which I'm sure most of your listeners do follow already.
Well, if you don't, you should.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony, for this short update.
No worries. My pleasure.
It's so nice to hear that you're doing the right stuff and focusing on operational enhancements, among other things. And when there's something new coming out, please do let me know.
I will do. Thank you for your time, Ivan.
Thank you. And in case you didn't start at the beginning of this podcast, you were listening to Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined. And if you want more SDN goodies, go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find links to workshops, free webinars, and other webinars that are free, as in free of commercials and vendor speak. Then there are podcasts, public presentations, videos, books, blog posts, everything you need to get started on your journey into the brave new overhyped SDN world. You like the podcast itself, go to podcast.ipspace.net, where you'll find the other 50 or so episodes. And if you like what you're hearing, go to iTunes as well, and please rate the podcast, because we still don't have enough reviews to show the 5 stars in the iTunes listing, which would be nice to have. Finally, if you want to read more of my blog posts, go to blog.ipspace.net, and there are like 2,000 or 3,000 blog posts over there. And remember, we call this software defined, but if you look deep into the bowels of it, it still runs on hardware.